Hello, everyone. We are continuing on with Richard Sibbes' Bowels Opened, his exposition on Canticles, or Song of Solomon, chapter 4, verse 16, up through chapter 6. And last time, we started the 13th sermon, and the verses he had were from Song of Solomon 5, verses 8 and 9. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if ye find my beloved, that ye tell him that I am sick of love. What is thy beloved more than another beloved? O thou fairest among women, what is thy beloved more than another beloved that thou dost so charge us? And so he started going through the words. He had some introduction here that things change in a Christian's life, that permanency and stability is for the life to come. Here our portion is to expect changes, storms, and tempests. And he talks a little bit about that. And then goes on to another point that where the soul is sick of love, and it's, I believe that's like sick in love, it stands not upon any terms, but it humbles and abases itself. He has another point, knowledge gives not the denomination, for we may know ill and be good, and we may know good and be evil. And then he continues on with the words. He talks about the loving, sweet compilation, O thou fairest among women. And then the question is doubled. Why is thy beloved more than another? And then what is thy beloved that thou dost so charge us? Then he talks about the compilation, the words they use. They call her fairest among women. The question, how comes she to be fair and thus fair? Answer number one is regard that she is clothed with Christ's robes, and then from Christ's imputative righteousness, so as it was like his robes, so from his righteousness inherent in her, the graces she has from him as well. The beauty of grace in that it is from a divine principle and original. It is not basely bred, B-R-E-D, but from heaven. And then secondly, in regard of the continuance, it is everlasting and makes us continue forever. And then he has a use. Let's take occasion to contemplate the excellency of Christ that puts this luster and beauty upon the church. Then there's an objection, but she calls herself black back in chapter 1, verse 5. And then he has some points of how she's black in regard of afflictions and persecutions from the world, regards of scandals, black because she's envied by the world. She's the church is black and unlovely, nothing differing from others in regard of God's outward dealing. And then she's black in respect of her infirmities and weaknesses. It was all part of use number one. Use two, oppose this state of the church to false judgment of the world. So they see all black and nothing good, but Christ sees the black, but he also sees the spirit in them as well. Use number three, let us make use against Satan in the time of temptation. And then number four, learn here what to judge of the spirits of kinds of men as are all in disgracing and defacing the church. So he's basically kind of going through some points, how to counter Satan's temptations and these things, and how Christ sees the church in the righteousness he's put on her and the graces that he's given her. And that is where we left off last reading. And it's where, Lord willing, we're going to pick up from in this reading. And I'll go ahead and begin. He continues, Mr. Sibbes continues, the church is fair and fairest. Grace is a transcendent good. All the excellency of civility and morality is nothing to this. This dominates the church, or denominates the church, the fairest. It's how she's called. This is not gilt, G-I-L-T, but pure gold, not painted, but has a true natural complexion, painted like makeup. But has a true natural complexion. All other excellencies are but gilt, painted excellencies. The whore of Babylon, she is wondrous fair, but wherein does her beauty consist? in ornaments, in ceremonies, to abuse silly people that go no further than fancy. It is an excellency that comes not to the judgment, but the excellency of the church is otherwise. She is the fairest among women. She has a natural fairness that comes from Christ. As gold is pure gold, so the church is of a pure composition, glorious within, again made so by Christ. It is for the false, whorish church to be glorious without or outside only, but the true church is glorious within. But that which we should especially observe is that we should labor to answer this commendation, not only to be fair, but to be fairest, to be transcendently, singularly good, to do somewhat more than others can, to have somewhat more in us than others have. For it is answerable to the state of a Christian. Is a Christian in an excellent rank above other men? Let him show it by a carriage, how he acts, or he or she acts, more gracious, more fruitful and plentiful in good works. There is a kind of excellency affected in other things. Much more should we desire to be excellent in that that is good, that we may not be fair only, but the fairest. The apostle Paul excellently presses to Titus, his scholar, in chapter 2, verse 14. Now the editor has a quick footnote. Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us that he might redeem us from all iniquity and purify unto himself a peculiar people. I believe he's just quoting the verse again, Titus 2:14. And to all of us in other places, that we should be a peculiar people, zealous of good works, not only to do them, but to be zealous of them, and to go before others in them, standing as standard bearers. Therefore, those that think they may go too far in religion, that they may be too fruitful, are not worthy the name of the being called the spouse of Christ. For she is fair, yea, the fairest among women. The righteous is more excellent than his neighbor, Proverbs 12, verse 26. Therefore, we should excel in good works, as the apostle exhorts us, to labor after things that are excellent, 1 Corinthians 12, verse 31, and then 2 Peter 1, verse 8, as if he should say, is there anything better than other labor for that? You have some so far from this disposition that they cry down the excellencies of others, lest the fairness of others might discover their blackness. Now, thus we leave the compilation and come to the question. So we're done with the compilation. The question, what is thy beloved more than another beloved? And they double it. What is thy beloved more than another beloved that thou so chargest us? Questions are of diverse natures. We shall not stand upon them. This is not a question merely of ignorance, for they had some knowledge of Christ, though weak. Nor was it a curious nor a catching question, like those of the scribes and Pharisees to Christ, to instance in that of Pilate, what is truth? John 18, verse 38, when Christ had told him the truth. What is truth? He says in a scornful, profane manner. Now the editor has a quick footnote. What is truth? He says in a scornful, profane manner. This almost verbatim, the opening words of Bacon's essay on truth, reminds one with others of Sib's intercourse with him noticed in our memoir. Back to Mr. Sibbes. Again, he's quoting Pilate here. What is truth? He says in a scornful, profane manner, as indeed profane spirits cannot hear savory words, but they turn them off with scorn. What is truth? This here in the text is not such, in the text we're reading here, but a question tending to further resolution and satisfaction. So it's not in a scornful, profane manner, but looking for some resolution and satisfaction. What is thy beloved more than another beloved? First of all, observe that these of the church here were stirred up by the examples of other members of the church to be inquisitive after Christ, and so to be satisfied or to have that question answered. Hence observe that there is a wondrous force in the examples of Christians to stir up one another. We see here, when the church was sick of love, the other part of the members began to think, what is the reason the church is so earnest to seek after Christ? There is some excellency, sure, in him, for wise men do not use great motions in little matters. Great things are carried with great movings. We use not to stir up tragedies for trifles, to make mountains out of molehills, to the endeavors and carriages of great persons that be wise, judicious, and holy, H-O-L-Y, are answerable to the nature of things, and indeed the church judges aright in this, then see the force of good example. Any man that has his wits about him, when he sees others serious, earnest, and careful about a thing, whereof for the present he can see no reason, so the person doesn't see any reason why, but they see this in other people, especially if they have parts or abilities equal or superior to himself, he will reason thus presently or right away, what is the matter that such a one is so earnest, so careful, watchful, laborious, and inquisitive? It is not for want or lack of wit. Surely this person has parts or abilities enough. He understands himself well. And then he begins to think, sure, I am too cold. Hereupon come competition and co-rivality or mutual emulation. Surely I will be as good as he. So the person acting in a good way, someone sees them and they go, this person has abilities or might have abilities. And they see, what does this person have? And then they desire to be like that person. Now the use. Let us labor, therefore, to be exemplary to others and to express the graces of God. For thus we shall do more than we are aware. There is a secret influence in good example. Though a man say nothing, says one, there is a way to profit from a good man, though he hold his peace. His course of life speaks loud enough. We owe this to all, even to them that are without, or I believe outside the church, to do them so much good as to give them a good example. And we wrong them when we do not, and hinder their coming on by an evil or a dead example. And let this be one motive to stir us up to it, that answerable to the good we shall do in this kind shall be our comfort in life and death, and our reward after death. For the more spreading our good is either in word or life or conversation, and conversation can be more than just speech, it's your behavior of life as well, often more generally. So again, for the more spreading our good is either in word, life, or conversation, the more our consciences shall be settled in the consideration of a good life well spent, our reward shall be answerable to our communication and diffusion of good, and whereas otherwise it will lie heavy on the conscience, not only in this life, but at the day of judgment and after, if we don't do those things, when we shall think not only of the personal ill that we stand guilty of, but exemplary ill also. So not only our own sin, but our bad example as well will be held accountable. It should move those, therefore, of inferior sort to look to all good examples, as the church here, to the love of the other part of the church. Wherefore are examples among us, but that we should follow them? So why are they there, but we should follow them? We shall not only be answerable for abuse of knowledge, but also of good examples we have had and neglected. Does God kindle lights for us, and shall we not walk by their light? It is a sin not to consider the sun, the moon, and the stars, the heavens, and the works of nature and providence, much more not to consider the works of grace. But one place of Scripture shall close up all, which is Romans 11, verse 11, that the example of us Gentiles at length shall stir up and provoke the Jews to believe. to those stiff-necked Jews, example shall be forcible, that it shall prevail with them to believe and to be converted. If example be of such force as to convert the Jews that are so far off, how much more is it, or should it be, to convert Christians? Wondrous is the force of good example. So we come now to the question itself. What is thy beloved more than another beloved, etc.? We see there is excellent use of holy, H-O-L-Y, conference. The church coming to the daughters of Jerusalem, speaking of Christ, her beloved, that she is sick of love, etc. The daughters of Jerusalem are inquisitive to know Christ more and more. Here's the benefit of holy conference and good speeches. One thing draws on another, and that draws on another till at length the soul be warmed and kindled with the consideration and meditation of heavenly things. That is little in the beginning may bring forth great matters. This question to the church in talking with her, I charge you, if you find my beloved, tell him that I am sick of love, breeds questions in others, what is thy beloved, etc. Whence or from that, upon the description of her beloved, her heart is kindled, she finds her beloved, so that talking of holy and heavenly things is good for others and ourselves also. It is good for others, as it was good for the daughters of Jerusalem here, for thereupon they are stirred up to be inquisitive after Christ. And it was good for the church herself, for hereupon she took occasion to make a large commendation of Christ, wherein she found much comfort. Now, number two, good conference then is good for ourselves, for we see a little seed brings forth at length a great tree, a little fire kindles much fuel, and great things many times rise out of small beginnings. It was a little occasion when Naaman the Syrian had to effect his conversion, 2 Kings 5, verse 2. There was a poor banished woman, a stranger, who was a Jewish maidservant. She told her Lord's servants that there was a prophet, P-R-O-P-H-E-T, in Jewry that could heal him, whereupon he came there and was converted and healed. And Paul shows that the very report of his bonds did a great deal of good in Caesar's house, Philippians 1, verse 13. Report and fame is a little matter, but little matters make way for the greater. This may put us in mind to spend our time fruitfully in good conference when in discretion it is seasonable. We know not when we begin where we may make an end. Our souls may be carried up to heaven before we are aware, for the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, will enlarge himself from one thing to another. To him that has shall be given more and more still, Matthew 13, verse 12. God graciously seconds good beginnings. We see the poor disciples when they were in a damp for the loss of Christ. After he comes, he meets them and talks of holy things. In the very conference, their hearts were warmed and kindled, Luke 24, verse 32. For next to heaven itself, our meeting together here, it is a kind of paradise. The greatest pleasure in the world is to meet with those here whom we shall ever live with in heaven. Those who are good should not spend such opportunities fruitlessly. And to this end or purpose, labor for the graces of the communion of saints, for there is such a state. We believe it as an article of our creed. How shall we approve ourselves to be such as have interest unto the communion of saints, unless we have spirits able to communicate good to others, pitiful or full of pity towards people, and loving spirits, that we may speak a word in due season? What a world of precious time is spent in idle, I-D-L-E, conversing, as if the time were a burden and no improvement to be made of the good parts of others. Sometimes, though, we know that which we ask of others as well as they do, yet notwithstanding, good speeches will draw us to know it better, by giving occasion to speak more of it, wherewith the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, works more effectually and imprints it deeper, so that it shall be a more rooted knowledge than before, for that does good that is graciously known, and that is graciously known that the Spirit seals upon our souls. Perhaps the knowledge I have is not yet sealed sufficiently. It is not rooted by conference. Though I hear the same things again, yet I may hear them in a fresh manner, and so I may have it sealed deeper than before. Experience finds these things to be true. And again, we should labor here to have our hearts inquisitive. The heathen man accounted it a grace in his scholar, and a sign that he would prove hopeful because he was full of questions, like a student that he had, because he was full of questions. Christians should be inquisitive of the ways of righteousness, inquisitive of the right path which leads to heaven, how to carry themselves in private, in their families, how to carry themselves in all estates, inquisitive of the excellency of Christ. What is thy beloved more than another beloved? Questions end usually in resolutions, for the soul will not rest but in satisfaction. Rest is the happiness of the soul, as it were. When a question is moved, it will not be quiet till it have satisfaction. Therefore, doubting at the first breeds resolution at the last. It is good, therefore, to raise questions of the practice of all necessary points, and to improve the good parts and gifts of others that we converse with to give satisfaction. What an excellent improvement is this of communion and company, when nothing troubles our spirit, our own spirit, but we may have satisfaction from others upon our proposing it. Perhaps God has laid up in the parts of others or abilities of others satisfaction to our souls, and has so determined that we shall be perplexed and vexed with scruples, or I believe like doubts, till we have recourse to some who he has appointed to be helpful to us in this kind. Many go mourning, M-O-U-R-N, a great part of their days in a kind of sullenness this way, because that they do not open their estate to others. You see here the contrary practice of the church. She doubles the question, what is thy beloved more than another beloved, O thou fairest among women? What is thy beloved more than another beloved, that thou dost so charge us? All right. That is the end of sermon number 13, and brings us up to sermon 14. But we are going to stop there for this time, and then, Lord willing, continue on with the 14th sermon the next time. But until then, go seeking from God daily to grow in the knowledge and understanding of who he is. May we be inquisitive about him, his person, who he is and what he's done. All persons of the Trinity, may we be diligent in the Word, which is how and where we find who he is and what he's done. And may we be diligent in these things and then in good works. And may he grant these things in our hearts, these graces in our hearts from these things, so that they shine forth for his glory, and then perhaps even for the benefit of those around us. And Lord willing, we will talk to you again soon.